Every great company starts the same way, with a dream. Not a pitch deck, not a spreadsheet, but a vision. And behind every entrepreneur is the same starting point, a belief that something better is possible and the willingness to take on the risk trying to build it. Welcome to Dreaming Big. I'm Alexis Allen, and I'm a relationship manager on the Texera Lockroom Group here in the New York City office at UBS. I've spent the last decade working alongside founders across industries and stages. From ideas scribbled on napkins to companies scaling faster than anyone expected, I have seen what it really takes to turn vision into reality. And what has always drawn me is not just the outcome. It is the optimism, the grit, and the ability to hold a vision long before anyone else believes in it. On Dreaming Big, I sit down with entrepreneurs to talk about where that dream started, the moments that shaped them, the pivots they did not plan, what they're building, who they're becoming, and the lives they're trying to live along the way. And so we go deep into identity, turning points, joy, and the season where that dream felt fragile but somehow survived. This isn't just a podcast about startups. It's about making something out of nothing, about protecting an idea long enough for it to become real, and about the courage to keep going day after day. And so whether you're building your first company, scaling your fifth, investing in a founder, or simply drawn to people who see the future before it exists, this is for you. If you'd like to connect or share your story, you can reach me at alexis.allen@ubs.com. Now, this is Dreaming Big. And so let's dive in. Most founders will tell you they started their company because they saw a gap in the market. But Margaret Trainor saw hundreds of them. She started her career in venture capital at Atlantic Labs in Berlin, and then evaluated startups at TechCrunch. So for many years, she was the person founders pitched to, the person who decided which companies got funded and which didn't. And then she decided to become one of them. What makes her story different is that Margaret didn't quit everything to chase a trend. She didn't raise a massive seed round, and she didn't move fast and break things. She built Atmo Home, a sustainable and clean home essentials company, the way that she had seen the best companies get built, slowly, sustainably, and profitably. She also helps her family run a vineyard, she's an angel investor, she advises other startups, and she's doing it all without the VC playbook she knows so well. This is what happens when someone who's seen every startup mistake decides to build a company themselves. When someone chooses the long game over the quick exit, and when experience meets execution. I'm Alexis Allen, and this is Dreaming Big. Okay, Margaret, I am so excited that you're here, and thank you so much for joining me on Dreaming Big.
Oh my gosh, I am honored to be here with you.
It has been several years where I've been able to see a bit of your evolution in building. But before we hop into all of that, I would love if you could just take me back a little earlier in your career, because you worked in venture capital, you evaluated startups for TechCrunch, you helped scale companies. What did you learn about what actually works in early stage company growth?
That's a great question, because early stage is really a different beast than growth. And the truth is that, so before I started working at a fund, I also worked in a couple of early stage ventures. So I've really touched like every piece of the process, and also with my own business. The truth is that there are so many factors, it's literally impossible to quantify them. It has to do with the founders, the founder teams, their personal development, the timing of the market, the business model. Like, there's just so many factors. But what I will say is kind of the defining thing that will put them on the path to success versus not is resilience and the ability to synthesize information and adapt quickly.
Resilience is such a key theme, especially because, as you know, you've been doing this for several years. And so being adaptable and having a lot of grit is really important. So during the time that you spent with these earlier stage companies and working with them both on the operating and investing side, was there a moment or a point that made you decide that you actually wanted to be a founder instead of being on the investing and operating side?
Oh God, unfortunately, yes. I had a lot of ideas of my own, but I think because I'd been exposed to so many different businesses, I really wanted to wait until I felt like I had an idea that was meaningful and that the world actually needed. So I took my time to find something that I really believed had legs to it and actually started with a completely different idea that eventually became what Atmo is today.
Tell me a little bit about the original idea and when you saw this problem and knew that not only did it get you really excited, but that you wanted to be the person to solve it.
So I actually started with a completely different idea. I was working for TechCrunch at the time, and when I got offered that role, I was in San Francisco, thought I was coming here to workshop a couple of business ideas that I had, got the job, had no work clothes, and wound up using Rent the Runway. And I was like, oh my God, this is such a brilliant business. Why don't we have this in Europe? So I spent about a year kind of testing it out. Like I hosted an event, I sourced like 200 pieces of clothing and was renting them out of my apartment. Realized pretty quickly that this is more of a logistics business than anything else. And also my overarching goal was really wanting to make sustainability something that was simple for people. But what happened with the clothes was that I was getting them dry cleaned and it was taking the biggest piece of our margin. So I got really invested in cleaning and care and just realized that we had really kind of lost the ability to take care of the things that we had and realized there was a gap in the market for a new type of home care brand. I think we'd also seen a lot of category changes in hair care, skincare, nutrition that were so much more about like self-care and health and well-being and ritual. And I hadn't really seen that applied to the home. So I built my own website for the rental thing. I launched it at TechCrunch. And then like a week later was like, I think I'm going to make cleaning products. And that's how we got there.
I love how you really had a vision for a completely different business and actually saw a different set of problems to go after. And what is amazing about, especially the early days, is you were really testing a bunch of different ideas. And rather than setting kind of a clear vision and going after one thing and one thing only, you were really open to other problems that would come up and seeing how you could find those solutions. Part of what that makes me think of is the beauty of bootstrapping is the ability to test a little bit. But given your background and being in venture and seeing big seed rounds and, you know, a lot of free-flowing capital, what made you decide to bootstrap, at least in the early days, and what were the benefits to doing so?
To be completely honest with you, having been where I was, I wanted to never raise any money, ever. I think it's a distraction. I think you wind up chasing arbitrary metrics that someone that doesn't really know your customer or your space is setting because they think they're trendy. And it can be a huge time suck and distraction from actually running the business, finding product market fit, and at the end of the day, delivering value for your customer. I actually would have bootstrapped it all the way if I could have. The problem for me was, you know, I started with one idea that turned into another one, and I didn't have enough savings to kind of be able to, like, you know, figure out which of my many business ideas was going to work. So I think two things. One, businesses need capital, and access to capital is an asset. And it is in your best interest if you want to see something grow big to have access to capital. Sometimes raising sooner rather than later is actually a good thing. But the second thing is that you need to really understand your business model and the financial fundamentals to be able to really raise well. I had never done a consumer product before. I had a lot of things to learn. When I moved the business to the US, it was a lot easier for me to understand what kind of capital requirements that business actually had and to be really efficient with our spend and make sure that we were built on strong financial fundamentals. That was very important to me from day one. I would say for any founder, like having a granular understanding of what it's going to take to get your business to the next meaningful benchmark is key.
In consumer, especially, you know, CapEx is high and logistics sometimes don't work the way that you hope for them to work. And obviously problems with any business arise along the way. And so I think that that's really practical advice, both in terms of sometimes raising more is better and also in terms of the fact that you really need to understand your own financials to best be able to fundraise and forecast for the future. Now, obviously, your original vision is a little bit different than what it looks like today. And so tell me about the evolution of Atmo Home.
Yeah. So when I originally started, it was very focused on sustainability and trying to create kind of zero waste products. The more I got into it, I built a relationship with a group of research chemists in Berlin at the Technische Universität, and there are science advisors to this day. They opened up the world of green chemistry to me, and I really fell in love with it. And I think also just as a woman, my personal evolution from my 20s into my piece, I became so much more focused and aware of my health and what my lived environment was doing to my health. So for me, Mo Today is, of course, it's a product-based business and we create products, but the intention behind them is really to set a new standard when it comes to how clean we can make our formulas, how sustainable we can make our packaging, but to deliver the product in such a way to the customer that it doesn't put the onus on them. And everything that we deliver is really intended to be safe and healthy for the customer. And that's the core of what we're doing. And that's why I think our category is home care, but we're approaching it in a pretty different way. In the US, we started with one of our products, which is a non-toxic refillable candle. And our mission is really simple. We're starting by making the cleanest candle in the world. That is my goal. Why that product? Candles are such an amazing, beautiful product. They are tied to, fragrance is tied to your limbic system. It calms you down. It changes the mood in your space. So many of us have become really afraid of having them in our spaces because we don't know what's in the fragrance. There's a lot of misinformation around what would actually make that product toxic. So we're starting with creating like a cleaner home fragrance experience, but we will absolutely be touching other categories. But our overarching goals remains the same, which is our tagline is modern care for your space and self. That's what we're here to do, is to honor the connection between you and your lived environment and create products that really set a new standard in terms of the cleanliness of their formulas, the sustainability of their packaging, and deliver it to you in such a way that you don't have to think about any of that.
You bring such an intentionality both to how you thought about developing your formulations, and the technicality around it is really interesting, because I think especially when individuals think about consumer, they think it's fun and it's beautiful and it's a lot of branding focus. But for you, you're really distilling it to the actual science around everything that you're creating, which is really different and amazing.
That is the part of the business that gets me the most excited. I'm a creative person and I love the power of brand and marketing. What's been really interesting for me is that our supply chain is almost surprised with a lot of the things that we push for. I've been told, oh, you're overthinking this. So a lot of the products that we see today, they may look and feel beautiful, but a lot of them are built on sort of the same fundamentals as the things that we've used for years. We're really digging into the science to try to figure out where the opportunities are to improve. It's not easy. I often get told that what I want to do is too expensive. But if that comes back to why we fundraise is, you know, there's work that's really worth doing. To me, it's finding that balance between investing in research and development and future growth, and then being able to kind of balance that with, you know, we've had profitable months, we're not profitable yet, but trying to build sort of solid financial fundamentals and make sure that the business itself is operating. So that's what I would say is like always my toughest thing, is kind of like balancing between those two.
Yeah, it's a hard balance, especially when you're trying to achieve excellence in what you're building. Now, you touched a little bit around your supply chain, but can you tell me what initial distribution has looked like? Because you have the D2C side, you're in some really aspirational online places and retail like Credo and Goop. And so tell me what that looked like from the very early days and what you're thinking about in the future.
When we entered the US market, I knew with a product that had fragrance at its core, it was going to be essential to bring it into a retail environment. And I am so grateful to Credo for literally opening their doors to us. We actually launched with them in November of 2024. And that was an amazing initial wedge for us, because we really got to learn from them. They're setting an amazing standard when it comes to cleanly formulated products. And we got to really get in front of those customers. And for that first year, you're really trying to understand who your customer is and what is it about the product that either works for them or doesn't work for them. And then with Goop, we had built a relationship with them for quite a while. We actually got a lot more inbound business once we launched on Goop, because Goop is such a tastemaker. That also was a really amazing experience. And then we most recently launched on Revolve. And our goal with each of these platforms is a little bit different. We're working on in-store with Credo, with Goop and Revolve, seeing if that's possible. So right now we're just online with those two. So we kind of get different things from each partner. Like Credo really gives us this amazing window into the customer and how they're shopping and what they're looking for. And I think with Goop and Revolve, we're really excited to build a deeper connection with our digital community. We kind of were very quiet for year one and really focused on improving the product, improving our processes, making sure that we were priced right, that, you know, our logistics were really solid. And now we're in a place where we can actually support that scale. So this year is really about investing more in our community. We also have two new products launching this year that I am so obsessed with, and I cannot wait to get these out because they're really different. And I feel like people are going to kind of get to see a little bit more about what we're trying to do behind the scenes.
I'm excited for anything you build. And what I really admire about how you have scaled this is, you know, you started slow. You know, you tested a lot. You wanted to make sure that the product was exactly what the customers wanted. You listened to customer feedback. You evolved from there. And I think having kind of an initial hero product is always really important and one that's super loved.
The most important thing. I am a super impatient person with really big aspirations. So getting good at sequencing is hard for me because I want to do something massive right away. But I think that the biggest learnings that I had, and I think there's really amazing examples of this. Touchland, I think, is a really good example of this. Focusing on doing one product extremely well and setting a new standard in the industry is more than enough to run an amazing business. And sometimes adding too many products from too many categories, it just gets cluttered because you lose track of what that real message is to your customer. And we're all being sold so much stuff all the time. It's overwhelming. So I think that focusing on product market fit and really figuring out what your wedge is with the customer, and then making sure you can deliver on that, get that right before anything else. I once had an investor say to me, just throw it out there. Doesn't matter. You could piss off your first 600 customers, but it doesn't matter. Just use them for the growth and then go from there. And I was like, I will never do that. If you are going to spend your money with me, I'm going to deliver an amazing experience for you. So I think there's different mindsets. You're never going to be perfect. You have to accept that you will always feel like you didn't do a good enough job, everything. But it has to be good enough to live up to your own standard. And I think you just kind of keep improving over time.
Yeah, that's a good mentality that you have, which is your reputation is everything. And you only get the opportunity to have a first impression once. And so you want it to be the best.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And you know what? We've had stuff happen in the past, our first year in business, our product got poured super late and then they shipped it and there was a snowstorm and it got left on the loading dock. I went down to our fulfillment center. I'm from California, okay? In ice and snow, wrong shoes, wrong everything. And it was like, I will label and wheel these to UPS myself. They have to get there before Christmas. And sometimes you just got to go the extra mile, but it's good to kind of prove out your systems a bit before you try to go too big.
Totally. You know, I think we often hear from founders and their tremendous success stories. And obviously you have found success yourself, but what has been harder than you've expected?
I mean, everything. I think I don't think I'll ever feel successful. I will never feel good enough, but I think that that's a good thing because that's what keeps you moving forward. I think any type of creative pursuit, I don't want to limit it to running a business because I think there's any type of like expressive creative pursuit. It is a personal growth experience. You are learning things about yourself while you're doing things, and you'll be able, if you're open to that experience, you'll be able to spot limiting beliefs that you might have about yourself or spaces and places where you're blocking yourself. And I'll give you an example for me is fundraising. When you step into a meeting, you need to feel so confident, like they are so lucky they have this chance to invest in your business and that you are going to deliver them the greatest returns of their life. And while there is a part of me that actually really does feel that way, you know, there's another part of me that's like, how am I going to do this? And I don't feel good enough. And what are the expectations? And how can I be better? And you kind of just have to embrace the full messiness and humanness of the experience.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think that it is hard in the early days when you don't actually know exactly what the next 5-10 years will look like. You don't know what that end outcome will be for an investor, but you know your work ethic and you know that you are going to do everything you can to make this successful, whatever success may look like. And so tell me about what you see for yourself and for Atma Home in 5 years? What does that kind of 5-year vision look like for you?
So for me, it's really simple. We're going to start by making the cleanest candle in the world. I realize this is a lofty goal and it may take me a couple years to get it where it is in my head right now, but that's sort of the starting point. My overarching vision is I really want to create a portfolio of products that support people in creating a really healthy environment at home, both from sort of a mental health side and a physical health side. Where I really envision Atmo as a brand is being able to create some like whimsy in the product line that's going to come out more, just playfulness. Like it doesn't have to be so serious. So we just want to create a brand that feels alive and fun and interesting and that you can actually have like a real relationship with. I would love for us to have our own retail stores at some point. I don't know if that's a 5-year goal, but you know, our goal this year is to really build more of a relationship with our community digitally and also introduce some of that whimsy into the product line. The following year, it's going to be about sort of expanding our category more in different spaces in the home. And hopefully in year 3, it'll be about creating more spaces and opportunities to connect with each other. So that's roughly what I'm envisioning, but you never know what's going to happen. You got to leave room for a little magic too.
That makes me really excited. One of my last questions is around the fact that you've worked in venture, you've scaled companies, you've built your own, you've been on both sides of the table. What would be your advice to someone who is thinking about starting their own thing?
I do not think that a lot of people will wind up having the business that they envision, but I fully believe that if you have an idea, you should do it, because the value is not necessarily what it is that you build. It's who you become. It's so cheesy to say this, but it really is the person that you become in pursuing that. I know people who started a business, it failed, but it led them into an amazing job that is so satisfying. And the skills that they acquired in that experience set them up for success there. So I just think that you don't know what the experience is going to hold. But if you have that instinct and that yearning and that desire, that it's 100% worth it to just put it out in the world. So I think everyone should go for it.
It's really good advice. So I like to end all of these with a couple of fun rapid fire questions. So quick instinctive answers. What is the best business advice you've ever received?
Strong financial fundamentals.
What's the first thing you do every morning?
I totally check my phone.
It's honest.
I check my phone and then I hydrate. One good, one bad.
For you, what does living a rich life mean to you?
Freedom.
What is the biggest money mistake you've made while building Atmo?
Buying too much inventory.
What is one thing you wish you knew before starting your own company?
Nobody else knows what they're doing either. So take the advice that's useful and discard the rest. Trust your instincts. Your guess is as good as anybody else.
So good. And lastly, what's one consumer brand that you admire and why?
Can I give you a couple?
Yes.
Okay. Seed, amazing branding, but built on real science. Crown Affair, gorgeous brand, actually really strong, innovative products. Soft services, whole new approach to a category, and just love the product, the brand, everything.
I also love those. So those are great. I've loved this conversation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm sure that there are plenty of listeners who would love to follow your journey and more about Atmo Home. So where can I find you?
So first of all, thank you so much for having me. I love talking to you. You can follow Atmo. We're on Instagram and TikTok, just at Atmo Home, website atmohome.com.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much. This has been so much fun.
Thank you.
As you heard, Margaret's story is about building strategically, using your experience, and playing the long game. She spent years being on the other side and watching companies scale, seeing what worked and what didn't, and then she decided to build her own company a little bit differently. Atmo Home isn't just another sustainable home company. It's customizable, planet positive, a business model that actually works. And if you were sitting on an idea that you feel like you need to quit your job and raise a big round, I hope that this story is proof that there's another way. If you want to follow more of Margaret's journey and support what she's building, you can find Atmo Home at atmohome.com. This has been Dreaming Big, and I'm Alexis Allen. See you next time.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC registered broker dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.